Is this part of a national tour that you're doing?
When I come to Alabama, no. I did my book tour back in October when Blowback was released, and I can't actually remember how Dr. Stephen Schwab and I, he's the former CIA analyst and professor at University of Alabama, I can't recall how we connected, but we did, and he asked me to come, and I decided to do that.
Oh, okay. Well, great. Will it be your first visit to Tuscaloosa?
It will, and I did my undergraduate work at Penn State, so in spite of that, I'm coming to Tuscaloosa anyway.
Well, you're coming to another football school, so...
When I was at Penn State, Alabama was our big rival.
Oh, man. It's going to be tough for you then.
I know, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, cool. Well, I know you've got this documentary coming out that you're screening, Countdown to Zero. Could you tell me a little bit about it?
Absolutely. It came out in 2010, and the producers are the same ones who did An Inconvenient Truth. And they wanted to do for the dangers of nuclear proliferation what they did for global warming. And it has an incredible array of people that the director was able to chase down and interview, from Gorbachev to Tony Blair to former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Musharraf. These are men that truly had their finger on the nuclear button. And they have all come to the same conclusion, that we have just been lucky. It's a really compelling film. It was critically acclaimed. I was fortunate enough to be part of it. I helped narrate it, and I appear in a little bit. I talk about the nexus of terrorism and nuclear weapons, and how really we are not any safer today, and it doesn't thwart any aggression by having nuclear weapons. There are now about 17,000 nuclear weapons in the world, and for sure they don't do us any good in places of such despair and violence as we're seeing right now in Crimea or in Syria.
I know that President Obama had been able to successfully negotiate some drawdown of nuclear weapons with Vladimir Putin. Would you say it's all for show, or was that a positive step? What
no,
do you think?
Very positive step, but more needs to happen. Under Obama, with the group that I'm affiliated with, and I'm one of the leaders, Global Zero, their international nonpartisan group that is seeking the ultimate elimination of nuclear weapons worldwide. With that push, the SALT II treaty was ratified about 2 years ago, which asked for reductions in nuclear weapons. And I know that President Obama, this is something that he feels strongly about personally. He wrote his master's thesis on it, in fact, about the dangers of nuclear weapons and how these are not the weapons that are going to help us advance into the 21st century. So what he's done so far, it's a start. And, of course, right now they are wrapping up a nuclear summit at The Hague. And this is the third one where they're getting all the international players, those that have nuclear weapon arsenals, around the table and to continue to decide how can we do intrusive inspections, how can we really lock down the highly enriched uranium that is floating around on the black market, how do we continue to just completely phase out nuclear weapons, because they're not keeping anyone safer, and their sell-by date has come and gone because they are no longer act in the way they had during the Cold War as a deterrence.
The reason I asked, was it all for show, was because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seemed like they still had thousands of nuclear weapons on hand, and it seems like basically one nuclear weapon would be all it would take.
Exactly. Well, you have to start somewhere. I'm a big believer in that. In any sort of social movement, any sort of change, you have to start somewhere. So I wish they were much more aggressive and pushing a lot harder and faster. There are so many deeply embedded interests that nuclear weapons still have that it's going to be slow going. But you're right. It only takes one nuclear weapon, or even a dirty bomb, that would be detonated in any city around the world, and our values and things that we take for granted and our rights would completely vanish overnight because the fear that it would instill.
I'm not sure how much you've disclosed about your work in the CIA, but part of it did involve nuclear proliferation, correct?
That's right, yes. I do speak about what I can. That's what my expertise was. I essentially tried to make sure that the bad guys, whether they are terrorists or rogue nation states, do not acquire nuclear weapons.
So you did that for basically 20 years, right?
I am not permitted to acknowledge any agency affiliation prior to 2002, according to my former employer. So that's for you to say, and I simply cannot comment.
All right. Well, this is sort of what got you and Joseph Wilson outed, right, by Scooter Libby, or ultimately by Robert Novak. Because he was in Niger, right? Now, he had written this thing about...
That's right. What happened was in July 2003, my husband, Joe Wilson, wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times entitled What I Did Not Find in Africa. And in it, he went after the central premise that the Bush administration had given for our going to war in Iraq, which was there was an imminent nuclear threat. The year before, the CIA had asked Joe to go to Niger to investigate claims of yellowcake uranium that allegedly was being shipped from Niger, which is truly the poorest country in the world, to Iraq. And if that was true, that'd be really significant because it would indicate that Saddam Hussein was seeking to reconstitute nuclear weapons. So my husband went, determined that these reports were completely bogus. There's no way that this happened. And he wrote up a report and sent it in. Well, when he wrote about this in the New York Times piece and so forth, because referring back to the President Bush's State of the Union address when he spoke about Saddam Hussein seeking significant quantities of uranium from Africa. So in any case, long story, but the Bush administration didn't take criticism very well. And a week later, my name and my covert CIA identity was written up in a column by the conservative journalist Robert Novak, which ultimately led to the indictment and conviction of Scooter Libby, who was then Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, on 4 out of 5 counts about how my name was leaked.
Did you and Joseph have any inkling as to kind of, I guess, the political territory you were wading into at the time? I mean, did the reaction to it, your outing, did that take you guys by surprise?
Oh, it was stunning. It was like falling down Alice's rabbit hole. We had no idea. My cover was intact, despite what those on the right attempted to portray the narrative that somehow everyone knew where I worked. That's absolutely not true. My cover was intact. Joe had all sorts of credibility for having written his piece, and in fact, in the run-up to the war, he'd been very vocal publicly about his opinion that the invasion and conquest of Iraq was probably not the smartest foreign policy decision we've ever made. He served as our charge d'affaires at our embassy in Iraq during the first Gulf War. He had confronted Saddam Hussein and helped secure the release of hundreds of American hostages. And the first President Bush called him a true American hero for that. He had also served as a foreign service officer in Niger. So he was very familiar with both ends of this of that alleged transaction between Niger and Iraq. He was very much involved in the foreign policy debate in the lead-up to the war. So we were completely taken aback at the reaction and the fallout from all of it, that clearly the Bush administration was feeling extremely vulnerable because, of course, no weapons of mass destruction had been found, and you have a very, very much an establishment figure who's pointing out that there really wasn't an imminent nuclear threat.
So obviously Scooter Libby took the fall, so to speak. Do you think it went higher up than that?
Certainly, I think that the vice president was involved, but you don't need to take my word for it. The special prosecutor in Libby's case was Patrick Fitzgerald, And he said that there was a dark cloud over the office of the vice president, and that Scooter Libby, he was convicted of obstructing justice. He simply didn't, he did not tell what he knew.
What was that whole period like for you? I'm sure it was like a whirlwind of sorts.
It went on for quite a few years because it was one of those stories that kind of kept unfolding and kept going on because it really went to the heart of what are we doing in this war, which, as we know today, in contrast to where we were in 2003, the majority of Americans recognize it as a terrible mistake. And Joe's voice was one of the first ones to speak out and say, you know, this really wasn't a great idea, and here's why. But it was some tough years for us personally, yes. It's hard to read about you and your spouse being called traitors and liars, and I was accused of being a glorified secretary and accused of nepotism that somehow I sent my husband on this boondoggle to Niger. So it was a difficult time, but for sure, Joe and I never lose sight of the fact that for our personal difficulties, it is nothing compared to what the families of the servicemen and women that have served and either gave the ultimate sacrifice or came back deeply damaged, and we're well aware of that.
Do you think if that hadn't happened that you would still be in the CIA?
Oh, absolutely. I love my job. I was really proud to serve my country. I had what I thought was the greatest job ever. And if none of this had happened, we would be overseas now, and I would be working on nuclear counterproliferation operations.
Did you get satisfaction out of the work? I mean, did it seem like, I'm not even sure you can answer this, but did it seem like the work was having an impact? And I don't mean to say that it wasn't.
No, there are days of drudgery like in anything you do, but every once in a while you have a day that is incredibly satisfying and you feel like, okay, you know, I earned my government salary today. I really was proud to serve my country, and it was fascinating. I loved living and working overseas. I loved operations. It's creative. It is challenging. And I thought I was working on something that was really worthwhile. And that's why my involvement with a group like Global Zero keeps a little bit of that going, because I thought, oh, when my career was over, I thought, well, that's the end of that. You know, now what? But I am still involved in these issues of preventing nuclear proliferation in other, obviously, much more overt ways now.
Well, yeah, and now you have a voice with the documentaries and the books and everything. I'm sure you have regrets that it worked out that way, but then again, you have this very public profile now. Are you happy about that?
No. I am one of those people that I'm not shy, but I do not in any way crave public life. But this is the hand I got dealt, and if I can use my voice to speak out about things that I care about, then okay. We moved from Washington to New Mexico a couple years ago, and we've worked really hard to rebuild our lives personally and professionally. But it's not what I expected at all.
Is being in the CIA as exciting as some people would think, like with James Bond images out there?
Well, I have to say I didn't, you know, like a sequin gown was not part of my work wardrobe. And unlike in Bond, you know, where he's always going to the Monte Carlo casinos or... Sure, that's all the TV and movie espionage stuff is very entertaining, whether it's Homeland or Bond, but it doesn't have much to do with reality, which doesn't say that I still didn't love it and did find it most of the time fascinating. I love living and traveling overseas. I'm absolutely fascinated by people and curious, and I get to use that all the time in my job, or did.
It's funny you brought up Homeland, because my news director wanted me to ask you if you watched Homeland, and and I wanted to ask you if you watched Archer. How accurate, Archer? I'm sure it's a very accurate portrayal of spy. Spy Living.
Well, Homeland, what I'll say, but I saw the first season, which I thought was really compelling TV. And Claire Danes is just marvelous. I think they kind of jumped the shark in the second season, I have to say.
I haven't seen it, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I don't know Archer. I've just, my head has been down. I'm working frantically to finish the next book in my series after Blowback. The second book is going to be called Burned, so I'm under deadline.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, Archer would, I think it would, you would like it. It's a cartoon.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to ask your opinions on some more contemporary issues. Like, your dad was in the NSA, right, for about 3 years?
Well, he was actually an Air Force officer, and he was seconded from the Air Force to the NSA in the early, very early days. In fact, he was part of the team that put in the first, I guess, hotline, you would call it, between the Oval Office and the Pentagon. He told the story that, as the, you know, they put in the wire and they went to test it. Shoot, doesn't work. What? How could this be? And they look out the window in the Oval Office, and there, the line of sight, if you can see it in movies and so forth, is the Washington Monument, which it blocked the signal directly to the Pentagon. So they had to rewire and rejigger. You know, this was in the early 50s we're talking.
Wow. Is that why you wanted to be in the CIA?
Well, I will just say that there is a notion of public service in my family. As I said, my dad was Air Force. He fought in World War II in the South Pacific. My brother was wounded in Vietnam as a Marine. My mother was a public school teacher. So when I was given this opportunity to join the CIA and serve my country, I thought, all righty, this, you know, this sounds pretty interesting.
So with your dad having worked, I guess, for the NSA or been contracted by them, what is your opinion on all of the controversy surrounding the NSA right now and Edward Snowden?
Mm-hmm. This is a fascinating debate, and it goes right to the heart of Fourth Amendment issues. What is the appropriate balance of security and privacy and a healthy democracy? It's not about Ed Snowden. It's about the issues that he has raised. And I'm very concerned, honestly, as I see, as we understand now, and increasingly so, and more sort of every day or every week with more documents that come out, the incredible extent and pervasiveness of NSA spying, which I've read a lot and researched it a lot, and it, in many cases, it is extra legal, and it goes beyond constitutional bounds. So we shall see how the president has made some initial efforts to curb some of the worst abuses. Senator Dianne Feinstein is obviously ticked off at the now the CIA, but also at the NSA. She's very astute politician, but she is definitely finding her voice in terms of how to push back. It's very disturbing to me.
What about your novel, Blowback? Had you thought of writing spy novels before?
My publisher, who was with me when I did Fair Game, he moved from Simon & Schuster over to Penguin. And as he settled in, he came to me and asked me, had I ever considered writing a spy thriller? No, but I thought it might be something I would try, and he put me together with my co-author, who is an established thriller writer, who Sarah Lovett, who really understands the craft of writing, and I bring to it the CIA stuff and the characters and the places and the plot. And we've worked really well together. So Blowback was fun, and I think Burned, I think I can say, is going to be even better.
So we'll be looking forward to it then.
Yeah, it's good. It's coming out this fall.
Okay, great.
This fall.
Well, so when you come to Alabama and you speak to these students, what do you hope that they'll take away from your talk?
I am speaking on a couple different issues. I think with Professor Schwab's class, I'm going to be speaking a little bit on the leak of my name, the constitutional issues surrounding it, journalistic ethics, and so forth. In the evening, there will be a screening of Countdown to Zero, and I will be discussing nuclear proliferation. And I believe there's also a forum in the afternoon open to the public, and I will give remarks there on the NSA revelations, as I just spoke about a moment ago, and look at the oversight issues, how far has it gone, why should we care, you know, why does it matter? So I'm doing a little bit of everything in Alabama.
Yeah, you're going to be busy. Well, it's been really nice talking to you. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
Only that I really look forward to coming to Alabama, and I think it'll be, it's a very full day. I'm doing a lot of different things, but I think it'll be very interesting. And as despite the fact that I, as I noted, I am a Nittany Lion, it will be just fine.
That's all right. I'm in the same boat. I'm a Duke fan, and I just moved here about 4 months ago. So,
yeah. Okay.
They love their football, I'll tell you.
Yes, they do.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much, Valerie.
Thank you.